Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. Shout out to all my channel members and patrons, as you are what keep this channel going strong. If you have a scary story you would like to submit, email me at zachbabytv@gmail.com. I don't know about you, but I personally drove to the Dark Forest. I wouldn't advise hitchhiking, especially after tonight's creepy story. They say the devil is in the details. Well, the truth is in the details, too. You can tell when somebody is making up a story when the details just aren't there, or when there's way too much of them and they don't quite all fit together. That's why I can't tell anyone about this. Even if I wanted to hold back, it's been so long bottled up inside me, I wouldn't be able to stop myself from saying everything. And if I did that, well, they'd cart me right over to the nearest asylum, probably in a wheelbarrow. No sense wasting valuable unleaded gasoline on a complete lunatic after all. I'd like to think all of us have a true story that we'd never tell another soul. Those moments of our lives when something so unexplainable and irrational occurred that we try to tell ourselves, "It'll never happen," or, "I must be remembering it wrong," sometimes just 20 minutes after the fact, even though we know that's only wishful thinking. I guess what happened to me wasn't quite as scary as some of the things other people have experienced. Alien abductions, astral projection, ghostly visitations, and a whole list of other weird phenomena, all of which fit quite nicely outside of the realm of what most would consider reality. I'm not sure if the hitchhiker fell under any of the above categories. I don't think he does, somehow. I think he's something else altogether. But who knows? Anyways, since I can't really tell anyone this story since they may decide that I'm completely crazy if I do, I'm going to write it down, and then I'm going to hide it somewhere no one will find it until I'm good and dead. Maybe I'll just throw it out to sea in one of those big corked bottles. I don't mind people judging me as crazy as long as I don't have to deal with it. I don't want to get locked up in some little padded room in a jacket with no sleeves, being force-fed a dozen brain tranquilizer pills every day. No, I like my fresh air, and freedom is nice too. So, time to get this thing off of my chest, at least as best as I can. When you keep something like this inside for too long, it starts to eat away at you. It started with the nightmares, the same one over and over, back in the car with the hitchhiker, and he's smiling at me. With all of those crooked, plagued teeth and his black and purple gums, he's smiling and laughing because I can't stop the car. He's driving the car. And I try to roll down my window to escape from the dead and rotting smell of him, that smell like old wet garbage mixed with something else, undefiable but still vulgar and rancid like nothing I've ever had the displeasure of breathing in before, but the window is stuck. The door handle is jammed. His speeding faster and faster and flying around turns, forcing me to lean on him clumsily, off balance, into the deadly smell of him. And the whole time he's talking, chatting about anything that he could think of. As if he doesn't notice that I've pissed my pants, or that I'm trying with all my best to get away from him. As if he doesn't see me banging the passenger side window with my elbow, all bruised and aching, trying to get it to smash so I can crawl out and tumble onto the highway to my almost certain death. No. He just keeps talking about the weather, how it's not the heat, it's the humidity, and how he really appreciates the ride. And as he smiles, I could see his teeth are not really teeth at all, but just masses of wrinkling maggots, jammed together but still squirming, alive and feeding, and his gums are not really gums, but are fat pink worms instead. He leans closer to me as I notice this, and he laughs. But of course, that wasn't what happened. Dreams could mix up the details, but they usually manage to create a sense of surreal realism that makes details seem not to matter. In reality, it was me driving, not that it makes any difference. I had no control over anything that day. the steering wheel in my hands did nothing but give me a false assurance and bravado akin to any young man in control of a speeding car, unaware of a patch of black ice just ahead. I was driving through the country, not for any particular reason other than to get out of the house, get some fresh air, and listen to a CD I had just burnt. I was far out into the country as my usual route took me, driving down a bumpy dirt country road which led to a paved one-way highway back to the city. I turned right towards town when I saw him. He had his thumb up and was obviously in need of a ride. Now, I'm not one of those people who like to think the worst of everyone, but in this day and age, I'm a little paranoid about picking up just anyone in my car. I mean, pretty much anyone I meet on the day-to-day basis seems slightly to the all-the-way crazy to me. Why would I want one of those messed-up strangers in my car with me? So he could pull out a knife and carjack me? Or bore me with unnecessary details of his life? No thank you. Maybe 30 years ago, but not today. People are just too messed up these days. Also, I like my time alone on my country drives. It gives me time to think, and I find that I actually do some of my best thinking behind the wheel of a speeding automobile. I've come up with some of my better ideas on my country drives. I don't want this smelly stranger getting in the car and messing up my chi, or whatever you want to call it. So I continue driving. As I passed him, I saw that I had made the proper choice. His clothes looked like they hadn't been washed in years. His faded blue shirt and pants were dirty, stained, and wrinkled, and I was fairly certain I could even smell him even from inside the car. His hair was mangly and looked oily and unclean, sparse on the top of his head. His weathered and worn face looked like that of a 70-year-old heroin abuser, and his sharp, bird-like features reminded me somehow of a gypsy. And he was smiling. An almost invisible smirk on his smile, but a smile nonetheless. The overall impression that I got from the man was undefiably creepy. He looked like he had been standing there for a while, waiting for me. I drove by him with a glance in my rearview mirror. He turned as the car passed him, still smiling and holding out his thumb, despite the fact that I didn't want to give him a ride and there was no other cars around. Then, although I can't be sure, it looked like he brought up his index finger and flicked it against his thumb. The second he snapped his fingers, my car lost all power. The speedometer needle began to drop down from 60 to 50 to 40 to 30 until I was stopped and pulled over to the side of the road. At that moment, I was already more than a little bit scared, but when I glanced back into the mirror, I saw the hitchhiker walking towards my car and my heart really began to hammer. I could feel the beat of the throbbing in my neck and forehead. Then it seemed like my heart seized up for a moment and I had to calm myself down with gentle, soothing thoughts about how everything would be all right. This was just a hitchhiker. He wasn't some demon, just a friendly old man who needed a ride. The snapping of fingers and my car's sudden meltdown, well, that was a little weird, but maybe I had just thought I'd seen him do it. Maybe it was just my shitty car being its shitty self. Hello. Thank you for stopping. I was waiting for a long time. I jumped a little when he spoke through the rolled down window on the passenger side. It seemed like he could have taken longer to walk the distance to my car. I could have sworn he had been a good 100 yards away when I had looked in my rear just moments before. A lunatic thought swirled my head, like a brief cyclone, then was gone. Demonic visages and mirrors may be closer than they appear, the rear view mirror warning label from hell. You might just need to wait a little longer, I said, pretending that this guy was a normal human being. Although even though I was clearly sure that he wasn't. My car broke down like it's just, I don't know, it just gave out on me. He opened the passenger door and took a seat, as if I invited him in. He kept his leg hung out the door casually. And for that I was grateful. Maybe he would take the hint and leave me alone after all. Oh, I wouldn't worry about it. The cars these days are very reliable, he said with a voice that probably sounded similar to that of a snake telling Eve that the apples were really very tasty. Most of the time, you could just turn it off and turn it back on again, and it'll be good as new. Give it a try. I had never heard of any such practice, but I was intrigued enough and frightened enough by him to attempt it. As I turned the key, he snapped his fingers and said,
Bingo, bango, tango, see? Just like I told you.
It took me a moment to realize it had worked. The needles on the display all bounced up from their nap and swayed gently into their accustomed positions. The engine once again purred like a 20-year-old cat. I sat in stunned silence for almost a minute, checking and double-checking all the easy-to-read vital signs of the car. No oil light on, no gas light or check engine light. The car was the same as it had been before its sudden failure. I looked over at the old man. His door was now closed, though I hadn't heard it shut or seen him shut it. He had a look on his face which seemed to say, "How about we get a move on?" His eyes looked impatient, like there was something going on which he was late for and didn't want to miss. I decided to avoid any unpleasantness or awkwardness and just give him a ride into town. I was headed there anyways.
"So, whereabouts you headed?" I asked, like a dutiful driver of any hitchhiker is supposed to, at least according to what TV books and movies had always taught me. He seemed to consider the question for a moment as I pulled back onto the road and picked up speed. Finally, he said,
"Just up this road a stretch would be fine. I'll let you know when you could toss me out. Thanks again for the ride. I really appreciate it, kid."
I hadn't been called kid by anyone in about 10 years, but decided to let it slide without comment. "No problem. I'm heading this way anyways," I said.
"And yet, you didn't want to stop for us."
He said it with any emphasis or enthusiasm. I wasn't sure what to say. I thought about just pretending that I hadn't heard him, but decided not to, although I did pretend that I didn't hear him just say, "Us."
"Yeah, sorry, you know how people are these days. I wasn't sure if you were alright or I don't know. I mean, who knows? Not that you look like..." I stopped speaking at that point, unsure of how exactly to continue without insinuating that he looked like he was a dirty crazy old gypsy junkie that I had originally thought him to be. How nice would that have been? If only he had been an average everyday lunatic like the rest of us.
"Don't worry about it," he said,
and I thought I detected a hint of anger in his voice, but maybe it was just impatience. I looked over at the speedometer needle. I was driving the speed limit, maybe more. Who am I kidding? Probably a lot more. I might have been going 90 kilometers an hour, I'm not sure. He put his hand on the dashboard and seemed to caress the dirty thing with his fingers. Immediately, the car started to accelerate, even though my foot was not pushing down any harder on the gas. I could feel the pedal falling away from my foot, instead, as if I had been increasing the speed using the cruise control, but of course I wasn't. So at that point, pretty much any doubt that I had of him being something other than any human being left my mind. I felt a few moments of sheer panic at the thought that this thing beside me was perhaps going to try to steal my soul or take me down the hell or who knows what. Of course, my first thought was to slam on the brake and throw him out, get as far away from him as possible. But how could I? If he had control over my car as much as it seemed, what was the chance of me being able to stop even if I wanted to? And what if he got upset that I wanted to throw him out? Did I really want to test the patience of this apparently magical being? I decided just to go with it. Sure, I was scared shitless. But what can you do when you're hijacked by a mystical spell-weaving hitchhiker, other than take him to his destination, wherever that might be? Then a new kind of terror struck me. Where on earth, or otherwise, did he want me to take him? He said just up the road a stretch. How long was that stretch going to be for this thing? Would I be driving him to some never-ending highway into oblivion for the remainder of my life? But no, the highway was still the same. It was just the same old Highway 6 heading back into town. The houses and trees and fields which have always been there were still there. We hadn't been teleported into some other dimension without my knowledge. People were still riding tractor lawnmowers around their large country lawns. Dogs were still running playfully through the fields as we passed by. A sweaty cyclist battled his way up a steep hill ahead. The world was still slowly turning as it should have been. "Really nice day, isn't it?" I asked the question, trying to sound steady and sure of myself,
but it came out sounding scared and unsure, like the squeak of a baby squirrel trying to make small talk with a huge hungry eagle.
"Fine day, fine day," he said, and pulled a dirty brown satchel out from under his seat.
I hadn't seen him been carrying a bag before that, when he was standing by the side of the road or when he had gotten into my car, and yet there it was. It was a disgusting-looking thing, stained and worn and torn like his clothes. He reached inside and felt his way around, apparently looking for something. As he was feeling around inside the bag, I couldn't help but notice a few strange things. For one, there seemed to be sounds coming from inside the bag. Some were odd enough, like the unmistakable sound of a rattlesnake hissing and shaking its noisy tail. But then there were other noises as well. Strange and alien sounds which are unlike anything I have ever heard of, cold and distant noises that somehow sounded alive and in pain. Small, childish voices squealed and screaming and maybe cursing in foreign tongues which I had never heard before, but sounded almost innocent, like ancient Greek maybe, I'm not sure. He reached further into the bag, and I saw that he had his arm in all the way up to his armpit, despite the fact that the bag was far too shallow to allow for that. Apparently, it was a little deeper than it appeared. Just looking at him like that, disappearing into a large, strange, and impossible bag, made my heart hurt. It didn't make sense, and yet there it was, no more than 2 feet from my face. His head disappeared briefly into the bag, then back out again, like a magician.
"Just looking for something," he said as he glanced over at me, and I realized I had been staring.
Of course, that made me realize that I hadn't been paying attention to my driving. I looked back out of the windshield quickly, expecting to see us heading for a ditch or into some oncoming car, but the car was still in its proper lane, straight as an arrow, rolling its way towards town.
"There it is," he said, and pulled something out of the bag.
He took the colorful little thing and hung it up from my mirror by a string, as if it was an air freshener. It bounced up and down and swayed from its string, and I found my eyes being drawn to it, despite my newfound remembrance that I was driving. It appeared solid at first, but then began to droop and bloat, like the bubbles inside of a lava lamp.
"Hope you don't mind. It stinks in here a bit, doesn't it?"
He seemed to be talking from a great distance away. I thought I saw him put his back underneath the seat, but it seemed unimportant now. The colorful, dancing thing hanging from the mirror seemed to be the only thing in the world at that point. I stared at it as it swayed and bounced. It seemed to be speaking to me, almost. Not in words, but speaking nonetheless. As I stared at it, for who knows how long, I began to notice that he was right. It did stink in the car. It was a horrible, rancid smell like a sewer mixed with something else, like rotting food and rotting flesh. The colorful spinning thing hanging from my mirror told me not to mind, to simply stare, and so I did. I stared into the colors and they began to swirl together, forming new colors, ones that I had never seen before. The new colors began to glow and hum and whisper to me. They told me to watch, to listen, to sleep. They assured me I would be fine, the car would drive itself. And so, I did as the colors commanded. At some point after that, I couldn't say how long, the hitchhiker put the bright colored thing back in his bag. My eyes followed it until it left out of sight, and then I snapped back to reality like someone hypnotized. I realized with a bit of uneasiness that I had been drooling a lot. I wiped the warm liquid off of my face and neck with my sleeve and yawned. It felt suddenly like I had been awake for a long time, and yet, at the same time, it seemed like I had just awoken from a long nap. It was a very backwards feeling that I found to be wholly unpleasant. The horrible smell was still in the car and seemed to have been intensified. I tried to breathe through my mouth, but the stink still found its way into my head. The hitchhiker seemed not to notice, though. He was still sitting in the passenger seat with his little grin. I looked out the windshield and realized that the thing I had initially feared had happened without me even noticing. We were no longer on the highway which I recognized and remembered so well. The road we were on now looked nothing like the quaint country drive. For one thing, this highway was a big four-lane job, like an expressway. Except this freeway was empty, there wasn't a pair of headlights or tailgates as far as I could see. There was no more farmhouses or fields lined on the sides of the roads either. Instead, all I could see on the side of the road was blackness stretching out to the horizon. I realized abruptly that the sun had gone down. The sky was dark and starless and filled with fat purple clouds which lit up occasionally with loud crashes of distant thunder. I turned my headlights on. I saw the shadowy shapes which were everywhere on the highway. Thousands, maybe millions of them were moving in the same direction as us, at roughly the same speed. The shadowy shapes were somewhat human-looking, at least for the most part. A few looked far from human, though. They seemed to waver and shimmer like mirages. I noticed they were all looking back at me, with the glare of my headlights creating an evil shine in their eyes. They stared at me angrily for a moment, until the hitchhiker reached over and turned off my headlights for me.
"Keep those off," he said, and I decided to listen.
It wasn't like I was driving the car and needed to see where I was going after all. I looked ahead at the road again, and the shadowy figures were gone, disappeared back into the darkness. With no light to illuminate them, they blended back into the utter blackness of the night. I looked far ahead to where we seemed to be going. In the distance, the silhouette of a dark city stood out in the horizon. There were large buildings and skyscrapers, but none had a single light on. The shadowy skyline was barely visible against the dark purple clouds in the sky. The usual glow which shone into the sky above most cities was absent there. The city seemed to be draped into darkness. When I looked up, I could see no stars. "Is that where we're going?" I asked the hitchhiker, my voice quavering with nervousness.
"That is where we're going," he replied.
I sat uncomfortably for a moment before asking, "Is it hell?"
"No, hell is one town over."
I looked over as he was smiling the same humorless grin that he had been wearing at the side of the road. I wasn't sure if he was joking, but decided not to ask him to clarify. It wasn't much of a stretch to imagine hell being very near to this place of shadowy forms and unholy hitchhikers. I noticed he was looking out the window and shaking his head, as if even he was astonished. He looked straight ahead again and said,
"There sure is a lot of them this time around."
"What are you all doing? Why am I here? I don't belong in this place." The words came out almost involuntarily. He was silent for a little while, and I thought he wouldn't answer. But then he said,
"I needed you to take me here. You can go once I reach my destination."
"How am I going to get back? I don't even have the slightest clue how we even got here." I couldn't help but wonder if maybe he had overlooked the aspect of the journey. After all, he wouldn't be around to hang that colorful air freshener up again.
"Once you drop me off, head back the way we came. When you see the lights, head towards them. Look into them. Look into them. They will tell you where to go."
That sounds a little messed up. I couldn't help but sound skeptical.
"Well, either that, or you could stay in the city with us," he said,
and as he smiled broadly, his teeth suddenly looked very long and sharp.
"Or I could just let you see inside my bag for a little while." He began to reach under his seat.
No, that's all right. I'll take my chances on the lights."
"As you wish," he said,
no longer smiling quite as broadly. We sat and drove in silence for a while as the city grew larger and got closer. I began to feel dwarfed and small as we approached the buildings, and I realized they weren't much bigger than even those of New York or Toronto. By the time we were entering the giant city, I couldn't even see the tops of most of the buildings anymore. They seemed to just fade away into the fog of the clouds. As we rolled further into the black city, the highway turned into Main Street. I could faintly see the shadowy things moving along the sides of the road, some huddled together in groups, but mostly walking alone. Many of them turned to look at the car as I drove by, but then quickly went back to what they were doing. The closer we got to the center of the city, the worse the smell in the car became. I had already pulled my shirt over my nose to try to block out some of the stink, but now even that was becoming futile. I began to feel like I might pass out with every breath I took seemed to be worse than the last.
You don't want to do that,
the hitchhiker said from beside me, as if he had already read my mind.
You don't want to fall asleep here. You'd be better off in my bag of tricks.
He looked at me like maybe I should reconsider his offer to get thrown into the bag of screaming horrors. I'll be fine, I said, hoping that I meant it. A few moments later, he was giving me terse directions, saying left or right and pointing hastily, and I had thought that he was in control of the car. I began to wonder if maybe it was all in my head, if maybe I could easily turn around right then and head back the way I came in. Either way, I decided I would need to get rid of this hitchhiker first. Might as well take him all the way. As we got further into the Shadow City, the hitchhiker seemed to sink into deep thought. He cupped his chin with his right hand and rubbed through his whiskers thoughtfully. He began to make little pondering noises like, I considered asking him what was on his mind, but then decided I probably didn't want to know. A little while later, the hitchhiker told me to stop and pull over to the side of the dark road. I did as he asked and pulled over in front of a very large building. The shadowy things were miling around outside like patrons, lined up for a busy nightclub. A few of them wandered over to my car and gawked inside, trying to get a glimpse at us. They pressed their dark faces up against the glass of the windows and stared at us, all the while making strange whispering noises.
Well, this is it.
The hitchhiker reached under his seat and pulled out his bag.
I want to say something along the lines of goodbye or get the hell out of my car now, please, but I couldn't quite find my voice. I managed to very feebly wave instead.
He seemed still to be in deep thought as he reached for the door handle. He grabbed for it for a moment, then took his hand away.
You know, he said, on second thought, I hope you don't mind terribly, but I think I will keep you after all. It's so hard to find a good ride sometimes. I'm just so sick of hitching.
It took me a moment to figure out exactly what he meant, but when he started to open his bag up again, it became clear that he meant to throw me in there. Somehow, I would fit. I would live the remainder of my life as a prisoner in this little canvas bag with no bottom. I would become one of the wretched, wailing voices screaming for freedom from the depths of this demon's travel bag. And I heard the voices getting closer as he held the opening of the bag up to my face. I felt myself being sucked into it, stretched out like an unlucky astronaut falling into a black hole. For a horrible instant, my face was inside the bag, and I could feel my neck and body following slowly after. Inside was darkness, but the darkness was hot and sticky and oppressing. From everywhere came painful wails and agonizing screams. It sounded like 1,000 individual voices, all begging and pleading to be allowed to die. If not for one of those voices, I would have joined them. One voice rose up clearly from the dark fog and managed to rasp parched soundings.
Run!
I yanked my head out of the bag painfully. The hitchhiker looked at me impatiently. His eyes began to dance and shimmer as he held the opening of the bag over my head. As he lowered it, I tried not to look into his eyes. I tried to find the door handle. He began to speak in a low rumble, humbling ancient-sounding indentations under his breath.
Mbachora visora yamba yamba.
The more he spoke, the more I wanted to be inside his little satchel. It began to seem like a very inviting and pleasant place. The wailing and moaning and screaming from the bag was still audible as he began to lower it over my head, but it seemed far away and unimportant now. My fingers found the door handle at this point, and it took me a moment to remember why my hand had been searching for it.
Pull! The voice inside the bag screamed. Pull! Run!
I pulled the door handle and catapulted out of the car. I ran without looking back. I ran through the dark streets of the city, the shadowy things watching me go. I let my sense of direction lead me back to the way we came, hoping that my memory would find my way out. My feet pounded the road beneath me, with eventually decreasing force. Still, I ran faster and longer than I ever had in my life. I ran until my head hurt and my heart felt like it was going to beat right out of my chest.
I ran until my throat stung and my legs were dead like wood. The air started to sink less and less as I got further from the hitchhiker. Still, it felt like I was running a marathon through the smoggiest, smelliest city on Earth. I didn't really think I was on Earth anymore, though, somehow. As I got closer to the edge of the city, the shadowy things began to approach me more consistently. They got right up to me and spoke their strange, mumbly language in my ear. They tried to pull me and tug my arm, urging me to go with them, but their black tendril arms slipping and passing through me like smoke. When they noticed this, they would leave me alone suddenly and disappear down the streets into the darkness of the city. Finally, I found a wide-open highway leading back home. I ran down it and watched over my shoulder as the vast city got smaller. It took a while, but after about a half an hour, it was beginning to fade into the distance enough for me to feel somewhat comfortable walking. I was still scared enough, though, that I wanted to keep running, but my heart and legs and throat said no. I kept picturing the hitchhiker speeding up the street towards me in my car, laughing maniacally, ready to run me down or capture me. I put my hands on top of my head, trying to release the pain of a bad stomach cramp and walking along the shoulder of the strange highway. I tried not to think about the fact that I would probably never see my little shitbox car ever again. It was unreliable, yes, but it was still a car. There's no way in hell I would be going back for it, though. After a while, I began to see what I thought were stars appearing in the sky. They shimmered and twinkled and began to illuminate the road where I was walking. The more I looked at them, the more they looked like the colorful things the hitchhiker had shown me. They danced and swirled and floated around like fireflies. The colors of them swirled together to make more colors, and they even began to whisper. I kept walking and watching them as the lights got bigger and bigger until they covered my whole vision. The colors blended and bled, and whispering got louder and louder. Finally, I could no longer walk. I sat down cross-legged on the side of the road and just watched the lights. All the strength seemed to be gone from my legs. As I sat there and watched, I felt asleep and awake at the same time. The lights whispered were not to worry, that everything would be okay. All I had to do was give myself over to them. I listened and obliged and felt a passing over back into our world. The light which flooded my vision quickly became blue and I realized it was the sky. I was lying on my back on the gravel shoulder of Highway 6. The sharp stones cut into my back as I sat up. I looked down at myself and saw that I was covered in brown dust. A car sped by, going well over 100 and honked his horn at me angrily. Someone yelled something out the window that I could not quite catch. Usually, that may have aggravated me a bit, especially with the long walk I apparently had ahead of me, but not that day. I was so glad to hear the voice of another person and to be back in this beautiful reality that I kissed the dirt gravel shoulder of the road. Not even wincing when I noticed the dead and mangled roadkill possum not 3 feet away. I got over and walked over to the grass beside the hill and laid down in it and rolled around like a puppy. I hugged the ground, thinking again of the inside of the dark bag and all the voices which occupied it. That could have been me for the remainder of my existence, I thought to myself. And who knows how long that may have been. I remembered the ancient-sounding tongues which had risen up from the bottom of the bag. Those voices had sounded the most viciously angry and the most insane. I got the feeling that being inside the bag extended one's life, probably indefinitely. That thought made me cringe. I felt a horrible guilt that I hadn't been able to help those poor lost souls. They had helped me. I tried not to think of the eternal living in the bottom of a dirty and waterless satchel, but it was impossible not to. I got up from the grass and walked back to the road. It was a quiet day on the little highway. There hadn't been another car there since the one had driven by and yelled at me. Then, a few moments later, a car appeared over the crest of the hill, heading my way. It twinkled and shone white in the sun. The hum of the engine and the sound of the tires on the road got louder as it approached. I brushed the dirt from my clothes as best I could, and I stuck out my thumb.